Is this thing on?
Yeah, clap for Simon, will you?
Here we go.
Welcome, welcome. Can everybody hear me? Yes? You can interact with me. It's okay. All right. Today is going to be very different than you're used to. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to have everybody come down here. You are way too far away from me. Come on. Let's go. Everybody up. Come down here. You don't have to hold each other's hand, but I want you in closer proximity to me, please. Roll right on down. Let's go. We're going to get personal. All right. Yeah. Front row is scary, isn't it? The front row is a scary place. I have to be in the front row all the time. It's very scary. Come on down. Yes, yes, yes. No, no, you're perfect. I might use you in my examples. You like me now, huh? Very scary. Very scary. Oh, this thing. Hi, my friend. How are you?
Okay, I'm in your way.
No, you're not in my way at all. Welcome, welcome. All right, I have two objectives here today. My first objective is to introduce myself to you. Gene has given me free rein to do so, so buckle up. Be ready. I think I know pretty much most of you, right? I've had interaction with most of you. Casual interaction. But today I'm here to introduce myself in a different capacity, a more serious capacity, a more serious capacity than all of you are used to. So, buckle up. What I decided to do to introduce myself today is I decided to not really preach a sermon, okay? What I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you a class. I'm going to give you a lecture. And then I'm going to give you a sermonette based upon the lecture. My goal today is to preach to you about the gospel of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. However, to do that, I must put Jesus into his proper historical context so that we can understand how the people who were listening to this message for the first time received and understood Jesus, because they are completely different from you. They think and function completely different from you. Jesus was dealing with a whole set of issues completely different from your issues. However, we can understand what Jesus was addressing, and we can draw context and meaning and purpose for our lives today. And we will do that in the little sermonette at the end of my lecture. So let me introduce myself to you. My name is Professor Howard Scott Van Dyke III. I was a professor of Judaic and Near Eastern Studies and the Sociology of the Ancient Near East at Olivet Nazarene University for 5 years. During my time at Olivet, it was my job to teach students how to reasonably and responsibly interpret the Hebrew Bible, or what we would call the Old Testament. I left Olivet Nazarene University to move back to the Northeast to pursue a PhD at Brandeis University in their Judaic and Near Eastern Studies and Sociology program. However, that did not come to fruition. Instead, I ended up taking a couple of foster kids in. They happen to be Gene's old foster kids. They're doing well now, but they were a challenge. But I did that because I felt led to do so. I was here once before. I came back here to work on staff. That did not work out. I spent the last 5 years doing a whole bunch of things that you don't want to hear about today. Okay? Way too much to go into. However, I am here back with you again today, and I am, what's the title? What is my title? Oh, teaching pastor, okay? Yeah, I like it. It's kind of cute. Pastor, I never thought anyone would call me pastor. Oh, it makes me nervous. I don't like it. Do you guys like it? I don't like it. It makes me nervous. Gene's like, senior pastor. I'm like, oh, man. I'm a professor. That's what I do. So if I were to go back to Olivet Nazarene University, I'd take a class in preaching, I'd read Fred Craddock's book, it would tell me how to do a five-point sermon, or give you a narrative sermon, or an expository sermon, or this, that, or the other thing. I don't do any of that. I don't do any of that. I deal with the text,
and
I deal with taking the text and placing it into its context in order to draw responsible interpretation. Responsible interpretation. So today, what I want to talk to you about is the gospel of Jesus Christ. We hear this all the time in churches. The gospel. I'm going to spread the gospel. What is the gospel? The gospel, though. What is it? Anybody know? What do we say it is? What is it? The good news. The good news. What the heck is this good news? Does anybody know what the good news is? Jesus rose again. The good news. There's multiple opinions on what this good news is. But I want to focus very specifically on the good news. Because there's a lot we can draw. A lot we can draw out of Jesus' teachings. A ton. But I want to focus specifically on the good news. What is this good news? What did he have to give other people that was good news? We as Christians, we run around and we talk about the good news, but who gives the good news to anybody? Is this the good news? Is this it? Coming here and singing a couple songs and standing there, listening to me? Is this the good news? What is the good news? Does it have actual substance? Is it tangible? Can we experience it? What is it? What is this good news? Oh, Jesus saves you from your sins. That's it. Do you know in 5 years of teaching at Olivet Nazarene University, I did not have one student, not one student was able to adequately articulate how Jesus Christ's blood saves you from your sins? Not one.
Well, just because it does.
Well, what does that mean? Think about what that sounds like to me, not growing up in a church. Think about that. That's nuts. Right? I mean, isn't that nuts? Where do I buy this blood? Walmart? Some dude dies 2,000 years ago, his blood falls on the ground on a Roman cross, and that somehow magically saves me from my sins 2,000 years later. Explain that to me. That's the core and that's the center of the Christian faith. If you're going like this right now, oh no, please don't call on me. Listen up. Please don't call on me because you are the Christians. You are the people that bring this good news to the rest of the world who looks at you and thinks that you're nuts. What is the good news, Mary Beth? What is the good news? This is Mary Beth. What is the good news? I want to talk about that today. And what I want to do is I want to focus in specifically on the good news. The good news that Jesus brought to a bunch of people. Apparently people who needed some good news. To do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain to you today how a caste system works. Okay? To do this, I'm going to utilize the Hindu caste system because it's very easy to understand and it's very self-explanatory. They got nice pictures online and you can see very easily how the castes work. Then I want to talk to you about the Judaic caste system that formed around the time of Jesus. And I want to talk to you about these people that got locked into these castes during the time of Jesus. And then I want to talk to you about how Jesus went to those people locked in those castes and gave them some news of freedom that they did not understand or possibly even believe that they could have. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to bang through the Sermon on the Mount, and I'm going to show you how Jesus brings this good news to these people, and then I'm going to point the finger at you, and I'm going to indict you. I'm going to indict you. Because you are supposed to be bringing the good news to the rest of this world. You are supposed to be bringing this good news to the rest of this world. So we're going to begin. PowerPoint number one, let's do this. What you are looking at right there is a picture of Brahma, okay? Brahma is a Hindu god. This picture of Brahma is used to explain what is called a caste system. Okay? Now, it's very unfair for me to do this like this, okay? Because I'm just saying this for the record. Okay, I can't do this justice because I would have to talk 2 hours on this to do this justice. the changes that have taken place within the Hindu culture, how they actually believe, how they don't. So this is super simplified, okay? Yes? So you forgive me? Thank you. Okay. The way that this system works is this. We've all heard of what? Reincarnation. You all heard of reincarnation? What does that mean? Anybody know? Yeah, you die, and what happens in your next life? You do what? Yeah, you come back, right? So nobody actually dies, see? In this religious system right here, you don't die. You die, and then you come back as something else, okay? You come back as something else. And there are five stages here. The top stage of the priests and the teachers, this would be the top stage of society. So right now, in our living world right now, there are Brahmins that exist. They are over in India, let's say, and they are in a temple, and they are doing Brahmin things, okay? Brahmin things, being the top of society, the priests and the teachers. Then the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are the next in line. These people would be the warriors, the rulers, okay? These are the next regarded by society, okay? So if you got the gold medal, you have now the bronze medal of life, all right? The Vaishyas are the farmers, the traders, the merchants. The Shudras are the laborers are down. We're getting lower and lower and lower until you finally get to the bottom, which are the Dalits, which would be the outcasts, street sweepers, latrine cleaners. Okay, now let me explain to you how you would be born into one of these groups and how you would move from one of these groups into another group. Next slide, please. This is the, the New Age word, very scary. Karma. We don't talk about that in Christian churches. Karma. All right, let me explain to you what karma is. It's the sum of a person's actions in this and previous states of existence. Okay? That's it. It is the sum of a person's actions in this and previous states of existence, viewed as deciding their fate in future existences. Next slide. Okay. So you are my farmer. Okay, there you are. You're about the midway here. You're my farmer. Now, you farm. You produce crops. You work very hard to produce crops. You do a great job. You understand your place in society. You do it well. You don't complain. You follow some of these other, you know, religious truths and follow. And when you die, you're going to come back. But you did such a good job and your karma was fulfilled that you get to move up to warrior, head of ruler of the state. Now you were a farmer. But you know what your problem was? You complained too much. Yeah, you did. You complained too much. She was working real hard and you were like, I'm going to sit around and let those crops die. All right, dying on the vine here. Guess what happens to him? Yeah, maybe you're going to be a laborer. So now you don't own the farm anymore, bucko. All right, you don't own the farm anymore. But you move down to laborers, okay? So this is the idea behind it. But in reality, the way that this manifests itself on the ground is that you have people that are at the top, people that are a little lower, a little lower, a little lower. And while you are in this life, you can never break your caste. So I don't care how hard you worked in this life here now, you will never realize the fruits of your labor until what? You die and come back. With one exception. The lowest of the low. The Dalits. Now, the Dalits are experiencing what we would call a living hell on earth. All right? What this is a group of people that are understood in the Hindu caste system as being untouchables. Now, the reason why they're untouchables is because they literally work to clean sewers. And if you've ever gone online and looked at this, these people are in feces up to their neck cleaning sewers out. All right? They bathe and they drink from the Ganges River, which is like 97% fecal matter. And their job is to burn the dead. Now, sort of like the Jewish system, the dead are unclean. So if I'm constantly touching the dead, I'm constantly touching the unclean, I'm constantly engaging in bad karma. So bad, in fact, that I can never break the system. I was watching a documentary 2 weeks ago. And in this documentary, this guy is standing down at the River Ganges in, I can't remember where it is. It's in one of my slides coming up. I'll talk about it again in a minute. But they're burning bodies. And he's talking to this guy, and I'm thinking to myself, this guy's got to be miserable burning these bodies. I mean, this is what he's doing. He's burning bodies all day long. Like literally in charge of touching dead people and burning bodies. This is gross. This guy's got to be miserable. And he was like, no, this is my karma. This is my job. This is what I am supposed to do. And I couldn't believe how humble the guy was. I was like, jeepers creepers, that would stink if I was ever stuck in that. But they will constantly be reincarnated after they die into the Dalit caste. Into the Dalit caste. So they're living in a hell. This is the Hindu hell. The Hindu hell is a tangible, real place where you're burning bodies or cleaning out sores. You are at the bottom and you can never leave it while you're in this life. Not good. Like this caste system, during the time of Jesus, another caste system developed. But this was a Judean caste system. Next slide, please. Okay. The first century Jewish historian, okay, Flavius Josephus, stated that the Pharisees, the Jewish sect that founded Rabbinic Judaism, to which Paul once belonged, and Jesus was a Pharisee, believed in reincarnation and resurrection. So I want to give you a big picture on what these people look like, and I want to give you a big picture on what they believed. I know what the Bible says. I know what you think that when you read the Bible, everybody should believe, but I want you to understand what it was that they believed while living on the ground, because this is the people and the situations that Jesus was addressing. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. Let me throw some dates at you, but don't worry about the dates. About 722 years before Jesus, the northern part of Israel fell to the Assyrians. About 722 years before Jesus. In 585 years before Jesus, the southern kingdom of Judea fell to the Babylonians. The Babylonians came in, destroyed them, took them out of their land. What they would have done was left the poor in the land, and they would have taken the rich or the people on the upper end of society, and they would have brought you into the fold, and they would have taken you off and utilized you as a resource. This is what happened. They were off in Babylon for 80 years or so. Now, during the time they were in Babylon, in enslavement in Babylon, and being uberly exposed to Babylonian culture, the Persians had taken over. Now, the Persians were highly influenced by the Hindus. Okay? Now, what ends up happening here is that the Israelites that were living in the intertestamental period, coming into the time when Jesus would be born, certain sects of them, specifically the Pharisees, adopted this idea of reincarnation. Fact. It's all over history, 100%. Today, Orthodox Jews still, in some sects of Orthodox Jews, still believe that if you are a super righteous Orthodox Jew up here, you may possibly be reincarnated into another life before everything ends in the end. Which I'll explain in great detail how that works for the Jews in a minute. Okay? So these people during the time of Jesus were actually directly, well, indirectly influenced by the system that I've already put up on the board. Does that scare you? Does that bother you? That's how they interpreted their Bible. What do you want me to do? That's not my fault. No, seriously, it's not my fault. That's how they did it. So Jesus is born into a group of Pharisees who do believe in some sort of a reincarnation and ultimately believe at the end of the age, God will send his Messiah who will defeat their oppressor and all the dead Jews will be raised up and live in Israel forever and ever and ever and ever. Okay? This is how they see it. This is part of what Jesus is walking into. The ancient Hebrews emphasized the importance of the present life over the afterlife. And this is where it's going to become really important. The present life over the afterlife. Much like the system I just put up on the board, it's all about the present life. Because the theological idea is there, yes, I will die and reincarnate, and if I work really hard, I'll come into a better caste when I come back, but I won't really know who I am. But in the here and now, they're stuck. In the here and now is the focus. In the here and now, you're at the bottom and you're at the top, and there's nothing either of you can do about it. Okay? For the Israelites or the Hebrews, the same thing is true. They focus on the present life, the importance of the present life, and I'm going to explain that to you in a second. As with both the ancient Greeks and the Mesopotamians, the afterlife, if it was considered at all, was conceived as a pale shadow of earthly life, much like the Greek Hades, the idea of Greek Hades. Also similar to Greek Hades, in the Hebrew afterlife, no distinction was made between the treatment of just and unjust after death. Jesus was born into a world that didn't think anything was going to happen to you after death. The majority didn't think this way anyway. You live in this world here and now. What's happening in this life, that's what's happening to you. They're not sitting around like we are and going like this. Oh, well, I got this life and I have opportunity and I pray to Jesus and someday I'll go to heaven and I'll be rewarded and the bad will be punished and yippee. That doesn't exist yet because Jesus brought that with him. For the people that lived on the ground, rewards and punishments were meted out in the present life. They were meted out or worked out or rationed out in the present life, right here. Tangible life that we can touch. And this is what I'm concerned with here today. Tangible life. What it looks like. We'll get there. Skip the next one. The ancient Hebrews emphasized the importance of the present life over the afterlife. This was the world that Jesus was born into. You have three sects of Judaism during the time of Jesus Christ in the first century. Okay, you have the Zealots, the Sadducees, and the Pharisees, all right? Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with some of them, right? Because you read your Bible and you hear about these little Pharisees or these Sadducees or blah, 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 blah. Okay, let me tell you the difference between these three almost denominations of Judaism at this time. The Pharisees, they believed in a possible resurrection. So you are Queen Pharisee. No, you're rocking it. You're the Pharisee. You're like I come see you on Sunday morning. Right? Well, you know what? It's possible that you'll be reincarnated. You'll maybe come back as another Pharisee, as another great religious ruler. However, also you believe that at the end of the age, when all is done, God will send his messenger, the Messiah, to defeat everybody else. He will come back and dwell in his temple in Jerusalem. All the dead Jews that have died will be resurrected. Almost like a heaven, almost like an idea of you do are going to get some kind of a reward after all this. Okay? All the dead Jews that are waiting around are going to be resurrected, come to life, live with God, live with the Messiah, live with the upper echelon of society forever. Or you could have been a Sadducee. The Sadducees believed in no afterlife. This is it, baby. Your lot in life is your lot in life. Your lot in life is your lot in life. Done deal. Done deal. Oh, wait, hold on. You have leprosy? Oh, you have leprosy? Oh, yeah, wicked. That's catchy. That's catchy. That's catchy. Why does she have leprosy? Why did she get it? Well, our modern minds say what? She touched an armadillo? Right? Hello, don't we all know armadillos give you leprosy? It's a very catchy, scary disease, right? And I don't want you to spread that to me, so what am I going to do with you? Oh, you're my Dalit. You're my Dalit. We get rid of you. We push you off. We place you in a cast, and in this life, you'll never get out of it. Now, you're middle class, you're all right, you're a fisherman, you're a worker, all right, you know, you may be able to work your way up society a little bit or whatever, you know, maybe you got a cousin that's a Pharisee, you'd be all right. And you're part of the Sanhedrin, baby. You're part of the ruling body. You're part of the ruling body. What we end up with is we end up with a caste system here, all right? Now, let me tell you theologically what this caste system is based on. Next slide. The theology of the book of Deuteronomy. Now I'm going to give you a lesson in the Deuteronomistic history. The Deuteronomistic history are the books of Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings. The reason why we call that history, loosely we use that, as the Deuteronomistic history, is because the theology of the book of Deuteronomy is plastered all over those books. The theology of the book of Deuteronomy, we believe, was present at the writing of Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings. Okay? Because what we believe is Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings was written around 620 years before Jesus, about 40 years before the fall of the Southern Kingdom, when King Josiah finds the lost book of the law in the temple. Okay? All right. Extra information you don't need. The reality is the theology of Deuteronomy is very different from other theologies. It's different from Exodus. It's different from the theology in the Torah. It's a very simple equation on how to live your life. You ready for this? If you are obedient to the law, hold on, let me back up. If you are obedient to our interpretation of the law, because we are the ruling leaders during the time of Jesus, if you are obedient to our interpretation of the law, you will be blessed by God. Now, blessings take on the form of money. You're a rich Pharisee. You're loaded. You're good. There we go. So what does that tell me about you? You must be doing what? You must be obeying. You must be following the law because your position in life is evident of where you stand in front of God at this time when Jesus comes. Obedience equals victory. Obedience equals blessing. Righteousness unto the law equals blessing. You are blessed. You have leprosy. Remember? Remember I gave you leprosy? Oh, you like that, didn't you? Gave you leprosy, right? Why do you have leprosy? Because you sinned. Because you must have. God punished you. You were a sinner and God punished you. Listen, this theology is, Jesus combats this all over the New Testament. Do you know the little piece about the Sadducees questioning Jesus and they say this? What about the boy blind? What made him blind? Did he sin in the womb or did his parents sin? I don't understand. Why was this boy born blind? Why is this boy being judged by God? And Jesus says, no, that's not happening. Because he's trying to wrap his mind around. He's trying to wrap his mind around why some people have leprosy and some people are rich. Your position in life is an indicator of your righteousness to God. Do you like that? I don't like that. I don't like that. I'm not making six figures. I don't like that. Thus, what ends up happening is a caste system. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Zealots, these are the righteous leaders of your society. These are the people that follow the law. These are the people that are doing it right, that have the right ideas. Then these people, all right, they're all right. You got a job, you get a little food here or there, whatever. You're all right. And then you got the complete outcasts. The people experiencing in the here and now the judgment of God, the people who will never be able to break out of that caste. They're in a living hell. Next slide. There we go. That picture on the left is the ancient city of Varanasi. That's where they burn the dead in India. Those are piles of burning dead bodies in India. The people that you see that are playing with the dead bodies are the Dalits. These are the internally unclean. These are the people living in a burning hell on earth. To the right is a picture of the Valley of Hinnom, originally called Gehenna. In this valley, they used to burn trash. Well, let me ask you a question. Take a wild guess where the lepers and the people with contagious diseases, the people that were placed into this lowest caste, tell me what their job was. And this is what Jesus walks into when he comes. This is the thinking that Jesus walks into when he comes. This is the attitude. This is the focus. This is how the first century society works. Next slide. Yeah, that's the song. Jesus Christ comes and he claims to be the Jewish Messiah. We have a problem with that right off the bat. Here's our problem with Jesus Christ claiming to be the Jewish Messiah. The people had an idea of what that Jewish Messiah was supposed to look like, just like they had an idea theologically of how to interpret the Hebrew Bible. They interpreted the Hebrew Bible, obedience leads to victory, disobedience leads to defeat. Obedience equals blessing, disobedience leads curse. Bad position in life. We see how this caste system is developed, and Jesus Christ comes, claims to be the Jewish Messiah. The problem is the church, the people that stand up here, would have told you that when the Messiah comes, the Messiah will be a man anointed by God, for the purpose of defeating the oppressor, which happened to be the Roman Empire at that time. Very good. He will then lead his people in some kind of a war where he will defeat the enemy, and Yahweh will come back and fill the temple with his spirit. And all the Jews at the end of age, if you're a Pharisee, would be resurrected from the dead, and everybody would live in the holy promised land forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. That's what they were expecting. That's what they were looking for. Do you know how many people came before Jesus and claimed to be a Messiah? A lot. Do you know where they ended up? Take a wild guess. Come on. Dead. On what, though? How'd they kill him? On a Roman cross. Why? Because Rome was in charge during that time. So let me add another dynamic to our picture. Here I have the ruling leaders of the Jewish party. They not only have got to somehow keep their religious caste infrastructure going, but they also have to cater to the Romans, because the Romans can squash them at any moment. Because the Romans are actually in charge. This is why they have to bring Jesus for crucifixion. They got to go to the Romans and try to get him crucified. But here's the deal. The Romans don't mind doing it. Why don't the Romans mind doing it? Because the Romans are ruling over these people. They're allowing them to practice their own religions as long as they're not causing a problem and not trying to overthrow the Roman Empire. But what is the Messiah supposed to do? Overthrow the Roman Empire. So what are we going to do with these messiahs? We got to get rid of them. We got to get rid of these messiahs. This is the environment into which Jesus comes. This is the environment in which Jesus will preach. Jesus Christ didn't do anything the Jewish Messiah was supposed to do. Not a thing. Not a thing. He changed everything. He refocused everything. He was the most liberal. Oh, yeah, here we go. He was the most liberal dude of his time. He was straight savage. He did things. We read it, we miss it. He did things that rocked his world. There's a reason why when Jesus came onto the timeline, things changed, people. He came in and told these people, no longer are you locked into this system. No longer are you locked into this. And everyone cried, heretic! Why'd they cry heretic? Because their religious leaders that they trusted were preaching the exact opposite of what it was that Jesus had to say. Jesus turned around and said, listen, your judgment's not happening here on this earth. Therefore, you're not stuck in that lowest caste anymore. Neither are you. You like that? You like that? Does that feel good? A little bit freeing, right? Good news, right? It's kind of good news, isn't it? This is the environment into which Jesus was born. This is the way that people thought. And then Jesus says this. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Really? Are you tracking me today? Are you tracking me today? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Whoa, 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 Jesus, hold your horses. Absolutely not. I'm a Pharisee now. Cursed are the poor in spirit, for they are being judged by God for the sins that they committed, and thus are righteously placed in that position, and shall never leave it. They shall stand there with their leprosy and burn in Gehenna. Whoa. Hold on. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. This is revolutionary to these people. Blessed are you who have been told your whole life that you're in that caste because of something that you did. Well, I know. I know, and I love you, and I care about you, and you're going to leave that caste. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. No, says the Pharisee or the Sadducee. No. If you mourn, then God has inflicted you to mourn. You deserve that. Blessed are those who, nobody dies around me, baby. Oh, yeah. Thank God I'm not like that tax collector over there, right? Thank God I'm not like that tax collector over there. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. No, blessed are the shrewd. Here is the authority. Blessed are the shrewd. Here is Jesus. Blessed are the meek. This is theologically the opposite. I understand why they called him a heretic. I understand why they threw him on a cross. If Jesus came here and did something comparable today, you, calling yourselves Christians, would probably put him on a cross. Because he would come with a way different message. Because you don't have it all figured out. Because we don't have it all figured out. Do you believe that? We don't have it all figured out? Trust me, we don't have it all figured out. Give me this head knowledge, all, you know, this. I'll tell you something. You spend 20 years studying this, and you know what you're going to come out with in the end? What does everybody tell you? More questions than answers. I promise you that. I promise you that. I promise you that. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And the righteousness that Jesus is talking about here is his philosophy. The philosophy of Jesus Christ. The philosophy of breaking through castes, loving your neighbor as yourself, treating others the way that you would like to be treated. This is revolutionary. This is much deeper than we really realize, you know. To do this, to actually constantly think of other people before ourselves, which is like the core Christian tenet. It is the golden rule. And Jesus like pounces on it in this Sermon on the Mount. He lands on it. Do you spend your day going like this? I need to think of others before I think of myself. I need to constantly put myself in his shoes. I need to constantly have that on the front of my brain. Love thy neighbor as thyself. I look at myself and I go, oh my gosh, I'm years away from it. I'm like, I'm so far away from that. We all are. We don't even come close to doing what it is that the Jesus of here was preaching. Not even close. Even if we did it a little bit. We got to get better at this. Oh, I'm telling you, we got to get better at this, and we got to do it together. All right? You are the light of this world. You are a city set on a hill. What do you have to offer these people? What do you have to offer? What have you experienced that you want to share with somebody else? What is it that makes you a Christian? What is it that makes you different than the rest of this world? What is it? What, you come here and sing a song? You go through the motions? Or do you strive to be like Jesus Christ? Because this is who Jesus Christ was. He went to the poor, the people that you don't want to associate with, the people that we are uncomfortable around, and he held them by the hand and he said, let me break that caste. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love thy God with all the heart, the soul, and mind. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Put yourself in other people's shoes, for it is the golden rule. This is how Jesus opens his Sermon on the Mount. This is how Jesus opens his Sermon on the Mount. In his seminal sermon, where he's going to lay all this out for us. He then goes into specific situations that the religious leaders or the upper echelon of society, specific situations that these people are engaging in. And he has opinion on it. And it's all based off of loving thy neighbor as thyself. He talks about divorce here. By the letter of the law in the Hebrew Bible, you were allowed to divorce anybody that you wanted, as long as you gave that person a writ of divorce. Well, because we're in a patriarchal society where men rule the roost and women are treated like cattle, What does that mean? Who gives the writ of divorce? The man does. All right? Depending on which rabbi you followed or which opinion you followed of which rabbi you followed would depend on how you'd go about this. Do you realize that these people could divorce their wives for burning dinner? Yeah, right? This is what Jesus is dealing with here. He's watching a group of people that are running around proclaiming the righteousness of God, taking their wives and throwing them out of the house because they burnt dinner, when secretly and in reality they want something else, or a little younger, a little chicky or whatever. And guess what? They justify it by going back to the Hebrew law and saying, it says here you can do this if you give them a writ of divorce. And Jesus says, absolutely not. Because you're taking that poor woman and you are throwing her into a cast that she will never get out of again in her life. You are making her a Dalit. With no one to support her and no one to take care of her, and in many cases taking her children and throwing them out with her. What do? We turn around and we take that statement, we turn it into some legalistic thing about, you know, oh, getting married, divorced, and oh, if you get divorced, you're the ultimate sinner. And Jesus indicts them for this. He indicts this upper class for this attitude. And once again, it comes down to that. He says this, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Now watch this. Very important. So that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes the sun rise on the righteous and the unrighteous. He makes the rain fall on the righteous and the unrighteous. What is he telling them here? Everybody is equal. Everybody is equal. I used to tell my students at Olivet this all the time. Oh, you think you're special? You think you're better than that other kid at lunch table you want to pick on? I don't think so. Because you're not that cool. God loves everybody equally. God equalizes the playing field here. God tells the leper that they are just as important as that person up there. Jesus turns around and says, theologically, you are wrong. How do you feel about that? You don't like that, do you?
I'm never wrong.
I said, I'm never wrong. See that? Did you hear that? That was a good answer. I am never wrong. That's what they said. I am never wrong. We got this figured out. This is the way we do it. Jesus comes and says, you're completely backwards. It's the opposite. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are this group you point a finger at. Blessed is this group that you throw into a cast and treat that way. Then he turns around and he wants to deal with this idea of treasures in his Sermon on the Mount. And the reason why he wants to deal with this idea of treasures is because this is one of their greatest indicators of being righteous. I have a lot of money. I have a lot of things. When I pray for things, you know what I pray for? I pray that I get more things so that people will look at my things and know that I am righteous and obeying God and doing the right thing. It's like the health and wellness gospel. This is why I have such a problem with it. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy. This is not some modern indictment of you because you got a little money in the bank, people. This has got nothing to do with the way that we take it. This has very much to do with the theological attitude of the people that Jesus was combating when he came. That is not an indicator of your righteousness. I don't care if you got $1 million. It don't matter. That doesn't matter. In my opinion, as a Christian, you should be taking that $1 million, trying to make another $1 million so that you can turn around and help 1 million people. John Wesley, make all you can, save all you can, give all you can. What I would be doing is taking all that money, all those resources, all of our brains, realizing that we're not locked into a caste, especially with the opportunities we have in this country, other than some of these other putting our minds together, putting our brains together to be able to help more and more and more and more and more, because this is what God calls us to do. Not bury your money in the sand, but invest it wisely. Invest it wisely. These people, look at me, I'm rich. Look at me, I'm righteous. Look at me. I was born here. Leprosy. You cannot serve two masters. Hold on, let me use this as a justification. Ready for this one? I'm the poor suffering Christian. Here I am. This is my character right now, the poor suffering Christian. I got no money, I'm broke. But Jesus loves me and he hates all them people driving Ferraris, I'll tell you. He's gonna burn all them up. Don't worry though, I'll be justified. Glory. Glory. However, you know, I got too much credit card debt and I overspend and I kind of use that as a justification for where I'm at in my life. That's what's really going on. We use it for the wrong purposes. We use these verses for the wrong purposes all the time. And when we understand them in context, we realize that Jesus is dealing with a very specific issue of people that have a problem. And their problem is they think because they're rich, that's an indicator of their righteousness. And Jesus has issue with this. Jesus has great issue with this. Jesus has issue with their entire theological construct that they derive from the Hebrew Bible. He has issue with their eschatology. He has issue with everything. And in this Sermon on the Mount, he's showing it to you right here. Plain as day. Plain as day. In everything you do, do unto others as you would have them do to you. For this fulfills the law and the prophets. And what Jesus is trying to explain to you here is this. That the legal system in the Hebrew Bible is not a bad legal system. As a matter of fact, much of the legal system in the Hebrew Bible is still used today within our infrastructure. Why? Because as societies moved from hunter-gatherers, nomads, and they started to settle in city-states, they needed rules in which they had to follow if they were going to live in that close proximity to each other. Okay? You can't pick her nose because you want to. No, seriously, you cannot reach out and pick her nose because you want to. I don't care how bad you want to do it. Because if everybody started picking everybody's nose in this room, where would we all go? I mean, I'd be out of my pew and out of my seat. I'd be in the parking lot if Peter started trying to pick my nose. We need certain rules. We need certain order if we are going to be in a room together in this much close proximity to this. This is how humanity came along. So you have a legal system that develops. And the legal system prevents bad things from happening, like murder and stealing and rape and killing and lying and bearing false witness against people in a courtroom and this and that and the other thing and the whole nine yards. We still use all those today. The problem is they should have been done based upon this foundational, simple, core point. Do unto others as you want done to yourself. And what he's saying is that me fulfilling this, me coming, fulfilling the law and the prophets, I'm telling you how to do it. Approach it this way. Then he concludes his Sermon on the Mount. With the adoption of Jesus' philosophies, putting you on firm and solid ground. Adopting the philosophies of Jesus Christ in your life is like building your house on a firm and strong foundation. We're not adopting the philosophies of Jesus Christ. Put you on what? Shaky, on solid ground. Here's the best part of this. Here's the best part for me. I love it. I love the way this is ordered in the text, how they put this together. It's brilliant. It's done this way for a reason, with design. Oh, yes, Jesus, but let me tell you something, Jesus. She still got leprosy. A judgment of God placed upon her for her sins in this world, locking her into that cast. Locking her into that cast for her entire existence on this planet. She will stand and burn trash for the rest of her life on this planet. She is locked in to this spot because God has judged her and given her that disease as a punishment for her sins. What is the next thing that Jesus Christ does in the text after he preaches the Sermon on the Mount, people? He heals the leper. He takes away the perceived judgment of God from this person and pulls her out of that caste. What caste do you put people in? What caste do you put people in? Because your job is not to put people in caste. Your job is not to judge in order that you might not be judged. For in the way that you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me help you with the speck that is in your eye, when behold, there's a log in yours? First, take the log out of your own eye. Then you will see clearly enough to take the speck out of your brother's eye. I cast you. I know about you, you drinker and you smoker. I cast you. I'm going to give you 6 months to hang out around the Nazarene church, and if you don't change in 6 months, you love your sin more than you love God. Don't give me that. Love your sin more than you. That person loves their sin more than. No, they don't. Who likes living that lie? Who likes living that life where you're juggling in the air these lies and these things and you feel bad about yourself and you look down upon yourself and you live with guilt and shame? Jesus says, freedom to you. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when you adopt my philosophy and men cast insults at you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. What are we doing? Are we forming relationships with people? Do people look at you and see something different in you versus somebody else? You claim it. Do you live it? What I care about is what is manifest on the ground today here. Is there something different about you that people gravitate toward? Have you experienced the freedom of the gospel in and of yourself? Do you even know what the good news is? Do you have anything to give anyone? Do you? Answer that question for yourself this morning. If I haven't experienced it, how can I help you experience it? If I haven't been there, how can I help you do it? We need to refocus. We need to get over the slights of the past. We need to move forward as the hands and feet of Christ. We need to move forward and love our neighbors as ourselves, so people see our good works and glorify our fathers in heaven. We say we believe, well, we need to adopt. It needs to manifest itself here on the ground. And let me tell you something. I have a very high opinion of this place. I have a very high opinion of this place. This place is like a blank slate ready to explode. If we do what? Act. If we do what? Trust in God, which looks like what? Bringing the good news to the world. You want to do that, or you just want to sit around here? You want to do it? You want to do that? Come here, look. Look, come here, look. Here we go, now I'm getting fresh. Take a good look, come on. Everybody stand up and turn around. Stand up and turn around, look at me. See, I'm in a classroom, see how this works? You want to fill this place up? You want to fill this place up? Love thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, thy mind. Love thy neighbor as thyself and practice what you preach. You want to fill this place up? People need to look at you and say there's something different about these people. These people help. These people care. These people love. These people are there for me. These people understand me. These people are willing to build loving and intimate and strong relationships with me, and I want that. You want to fill this place up? Love thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, thy mind, and you love your neighbor as yourself. I want everybody in this place to put on the front of your brain. All right, because this is the last time I'm going to get to do this for a really long time. You put on the front of your brains. You hear me? Everybody. You put on the front of your brains. I'm going to put you ahead of myself. I'm going to think and put myself in your position so that I can understand you, so that I can relate to you, so that I can have grace and mercy on you, so that I can have peace with you, so I can treat you the way I want to be treated, so you look at me and see my good works and glorify my Father who is in heaven, so that you want to become like me. You no longer have to live in your caste ever again. I don't care what it is, where it is, how you feel, you don't ever have to live in your caste again. You can overcome things, and people can help us all to overcome things together. We can work on things together and have an actually, tangibly better life. Because if Christianity has nothing to offer us in this world, what good is it? What good is it? There we go. So we're going to stop this. It's getting too crazy. Go ahead.